As you can tell from the presentation you've just had, there's a wildfire that's sweeping across the United States when it comes to sexuality and sexual brokenness and those kinds of issues. But we have been spitting in the wind when it comes to figuring out a way to extinguish this wildfire. And so I want to help you to understand just how much this wildfire is fueling the sex trafficking of U.S. children, but I'm going to teach you the big concept of what human trafficking is, give you some definitions, and help you to understand this issue as a whole from a U.S.-centric kind of perspective. So a lot of information you've just had. Everybody take a big, deep breath. No, really, everybody take a big, deep breath. Ready? Has anybody here flown with the Blue Angels? Nobody? Okay, so the first thing you do when you get in the cockpit is you put on your crisscross straps, right? So I want you to put on your straps because we're about to engage on this at a very fast pace. I'm going to give you a flyover, if you will, and hopefully help you to see information that you might not have seen before, show you some connections that you might not have seen before, and help you to understand God's perspective on this. Because I can tell you from my vantage point, God is seeing what's happening, he's hearing the cries of the children, and he is compassionately responding, and his church is the response, okay? So just take all of that in and be thinking about that as you process this information. I'm really an independent contractor for the Pure Hope Foundation. I have been educating on this issue since about 2006, and I took a leap of faith in 2010 to do full-time education. I mean, I literally took a leap of faith for my job, and I'm a full-time edupreneur. I'm an educator, but I'm an entrepreneur as well. And so I live a missional lifestyle and live by faith about what God's had me to do on this issue, because God has gloriously ruined me to this. This is my one cannot not do thing in my lifetime. And you'll probably understand more of that as I go along. But let me just introduce to you what human trafficking is in the global sense. And we should have audio. There we go.
We live in a modern world. Everything is possible.
Turn it up just
a little. We fly to the moon. We decode the human gene. We invent new and better technologies to create, produce, and continuously improve the quality of our lives. The world today is a global market, where products, labor, and money flow in an ever-expanding search for maximizing profits. Wherever there's a demand, there will be supply. We want something, someone will make sure we get it, for the lowest cost and the biggest profit. But it comes at a price. What if I told you that 27 million people are still enslaved today? Modern-day slavery has become a multi-billion dollar business and is now the second largest criminal industry in the world. The U.S. government estimates that every year about 200,000 people are trafficked into and within the United States to be exploited as labor and sex slaves. About half of them are children. Modern-day slavery is not an overseas event. It is happening right here, right now, in your town.
Human trafficking is the abuse of people through force, fraud, or coercion, making them do something they don't want to do for no money or little money in either labor industry or into this commercial sex industry.
This is about the law of supply and demand, and they don't care where the victims come from. So we need to be alert and make sure that we educate our children and that we create opportunities. The thing that makes someone at risk is not having options.
I first heard the term human trafficking about a year and a half ago. I may have heard it before that, but I never registered with me. And I was listening to a new friend of mine speak about the issue. And I was embarrassed to say that I didn't know what she was talking about.
We have a form of modern-day slavery in the United States. It exists. And people need to be on the lookout, and people need to be aware and educated about it. Share it with your friends. Talk about it with people at a dinner party so that people can keep their eyes open. If they see something, just pick up the phone and call 888-3737-888.
and we would tell local stories of human trafficking behind gated communities in Orange County and open students' eyes to the issue locally, because oftentimes I think it was easy for students to recognize the problem on a global scale outside of the United States, but to take that next step and realize that it happened so close to home was big for me and my understanding of the issue.
And I was also really shocked to learn how much our actions and our demands on goods and services that we want to buy impacts trafficked victims.
And there are very few crimes I can think of, especially with women and children, short of domestic violence, that show such a degree of selfishness and greed and taking advantage of other people unreasonably than slavery. I don't think there's anyone in the world who can look at slavery and say it's tolerable or acceptable. It's outright inappropriate.
This is something that has to stop, and it's only going to stop when everybody gets involved.
Right now, what we encourage everyone to do is use a national hotline number, which will talk you through the things you need to go through as far as understanding the dynamics, and they'll help you understand what's going on in your neighborhood or what you're observing. That number is 1-888-37-37-888.
The number is 888-37-37-888. That's the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. Is there any way to kill just this light right here? Just this one? That way you won't see how tilted my halo is. Yeah, down, just as far down as you can take it. That would be great. The Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000 has two basic definitions. One is about sex trafficking, which is a commercial sex act induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in which the age of the person being induced to perform such acts is not yet 18. That means if a child exchanges a sex act for anything of value, whether it's a night on a couch, a shower, or a McDonald's cheeseburger, it's trafficking. Okay? If they're exchanging sex for something of value, it's trafficking if they're under 18. And the second definition has to do with labor trafficking, the recruiting, harboring, and transport provision, or obtaining of a person for labor or services through the use of force, fraud, and coercion. So those three elements, force, fraud, and coercion, are a big part of understanding trafficking. You remember from the description of what he said, there are 27 million people estimated to be in slavery today. That's more than during the 350 years of the transatlantic slave trade. That number is as many people as the top largest 16 cities in the United States. That's how many people are trafficked around the world. And in the United States, he said, the estimates are 200,000 people trafficked into and throughout the United States, and that is every year. And the reality is the State Department says that probably less than 20,000 of those are international citizens trafficked into the United States. So who does that leave the other 180,000? Us, U.S. citizens who are here either naturally born here or they're naturalized citizens and or are legal citizens here. So we have a huge number of people who are being trafficked right under our noses. And what I wanted to do is delve down into domestic minor sex trafficking, because that's the most likely way that you're going to see this. And as this particular conference is designed, it's to help you as a parent to understand those issues that are creating these dynamics and what it might look like. So I'm going to hopefully help you to understand and recognize some of these signs and symptoms, because they may be in a house near you. From earlier, Tesh said that she had talked to Shared Hope International, which did the original study, and this study was commissioned by the United States Department of Justice. They were given 10 cities to study all across the United States because they figured 10 cities, they could get a pretty good snapshot of what that looked like in the United States. Three of the 10 cities were in Texas. Apollo 13 comes to mind. Hello, Houston, we have a problem. But Houston was not one of the cities. They were Dallas, Fort Worth, and San Antonio. And when we think of Dallas and Fort Worth, we think of the Metroplex. We think of, you know, that's all together. Why would they study those two cities separately? Well, the reality is the way that Dallas and the way that Fort Worth choose to deal with this issue of domestic minor sex trafficking, prostitution, those kinds of things, is very, very different. So this study is completely available online. The national compilation is available online. And Shared Hope International has some of the best resources on domestic minor sex trafficking that you could find. Because I'm a seed planter and a seed scatterer of information, I become a resource hub for other people. So if there's something in particular you want from today, I'm going to help you as you take your journey as to what the next steps are. And this is one of the great resources that we have available to us. They actually developed another resource called Renting Lacey, which is a compilation of stories from children that they have been able to help come out of sex trafficking. And they talk about how this is so normalized in our hypersexualized culture through what we talked about just a little while ago, music, media, movies, fashion, television, pornography, and all of those pieces. And we're going to talk some about that. And for whoever's children are in the room, I'm just going to warn you, we're talking about sex and pornography, and we're talking about some very real things. And so if you feel like they need to be removed at any given point, you just feel free to get up and do that, okay? Just want to give you that heads up. So this is a video that is from Shared Hope International, and this is one of the stories, not the story that Tesh had already touched on, but another one. But it's impossible to protect all girls from guys like I was, he said, because that's what we do. We eat, drink, and sleep, thinking of ways to trick young girls into doing what we want them to do. And the reason is because it's so lucrative. A man can make $250,000 or more off of one child. And if he has five children in his stable, that's what they call the group of girls or boys, is their stable. And I know horses around here in Texas get better treatment than these kids do. They can make $1 million a year. And they're quite brazen about it. So let's watch this brief video.
Working with what we have, and I was like, what do we have? And she's like, your body.
I didn't know about sex trafficking until I was in the middle of it.
After a while, you just kind of get used to it. Like, everything that goes around just doesn't seem out of ordinary to you.
We really believed that she was getting ready to be sold.
Brianna comes from a small town, was an A student, did everything you hope your daughter would do.
My dreams were to become a nurse. While I was in high school, I had found a waitressing job.
I love school. I love being around my friends, and my science class was like my big thing.
These traffickers or pimps, they pretend to be an older boyfriend. And these young girls actually fall in love with these guys and believe that this guy loves them back.
He was like 24. He played football at a university. He had bought me some designer jeans and things.
Go to like movies and malls, trips, stuff like that. He bought me a dress and some jewelry because like I didn't really have stuff like that.
It's important for the pimp or the trafficker to separate these girls from their family and their friends.
He really gave me the courage to kind of stand up to my mom.
He was like, you know, just kind of keep it on the down low.
One day he asks for something, and even though she doesn't want to do it, she's so worried about losing him that she will. And once he's had her do it once, he pretty much can control her from then on.
He kept saying that he needed money. I was like, you know, I'll help you or whatever.
I made a choice that night, but I had found out that they actually had chosen me.
There are a variety of pimping styles in the United States, and there's a lady here in the Metroplex, Alyssa Jordheim, who wrote a book called Made in America, and she talks about several different styles of pimps. But some of the information that you received in the first session about vulnerabilities that children have because of divorce in their family or single-parent homes, those kinds of things, they create the underlying dynamics that we assume are part of the issues of trafficking. But let me tell you what the number one common thread is for children who get trafficked. It's child sexual abuse. Child sexual abuse in the United States affects at least 10% of all children. And there's two different studies in the area of girls affected by child sexual abuse. One says 1 in 4 girls will be sexually abused before her 18th birthday, and the other one says in up to 21, 33% of all girls will be sexually abused before their 21st birthday. So when you start looking at the overall compilation study, 10% really doesn't represent the girls very well, because there's twice as many girls, pretty much, who are affected. And it's 1 in 6 boys, or up to 17%. So that's how they get that 10% dynamic. But that is a key indicator for understanding vulnerabilities. But these pimping styles are that they look for kids who have those boundaries that have been crossed, or that have issues in their life, like single-parent homes. 1/3 of all our children are growing up in single-parent family households. And if we could all sing together, looking for love in all the wrong places, you know, the chorus of that, that's what's happening with these children, whether they're boys or girls. They're looking for that thing that's missing in their family, looking for love and relationships and those kind of things. That's why kids get engaged with gangs. That's why kids get engaged with people who are predatory, is because they have some vulnerabilities there. And what we're finding all across the United States is there's various kinds of pimping. Yeah, there's romantic Romeo pimping, like what was demonstrated on the Chosen video, but there's stranger pimping, you know, where a girl will get introduced to a stranger in her life. And that can be on music, media, movies, all kind of other ways that they get in kids' lives, social media, those kinds of things. And pretty soon they're meeting up, and, you know, they have all kind of interaction with people that they don't know. And we're finding that it cuts across all socio-demographics. It doesn't matter if it's a child whose parents are together and are well able to take care of them, or a child who's living in poverty. Every child has some level of vulnerabilities. And it doesn't matter what ethnicity there are vulnerabilities no matter what race that they are as well. But the most victimized children in the United States are those who are Hispanic and African American. That's the largest percentage of victims that are out there. But the perpetrators of this crime, and I know that this is kind of hard to see up here because this is so many people. This was a Polk County Sheriff's Office arrest, and they represent every color of the rainbow, red and yellow, black and white. They're engaged with and delivering of services in the commercial sex industry in the United States. And the towns of origin are across the entire United States. There is not one state that doesn't have sex trafficking and sex trafficking of children. And they're recruited from various locations all across the country. And this is not your Amber Hagerman kind of abduction situation. It's not your J.C. Dugard kind of abduction situation, even though that may be a part of it, or your Elizabeth Smarts, that may be a part of it. Those are a very, very small percentage of the children who are sex trafficked. A lot of them are trafficked relationally by people that come into their life, that romance them or become their boyfriends. And there's a portion of them that are also trafficked by their parents. Parents selling their own children, whether it's for money because their family is in a situation of desperate need, or because there's drug and alcohol addiction in the parent's life and they sell their children in exchange for those kinds of things. And there's, you know, parents who are selling their kids for transportation, trucks, cars, that kind of stuff. And that's happening right here. So I wanted to bring you a Denton story. This is an arrest that was made right here in Denton County of this fella whose name I cannot see because it's too far, William Bennett Jacobs. And what I found interesting about this story is I actually found the victim side of this story. And she appeared on Dr. Phil, and we actually have a video of her side of what happened in this story.
When my daughter Hope was young, she was a straight A student.
I was a normal, regular kid. I loved to do theater. I loved soccer and cheerleading.
Hope was filled with innocence, joy, and ambition.
When I was 14, my whole life changed.
My daughter Hope was kidnapped by sex traffickers. Hope was forced into prostitution.
It all started because I posted on a social media site that I hated my mother. A woman messaged me back telling me that I'd go stay with her and we'd go partying. She showed up within the next 45 minutes and I was gone.
The suspects target girls who post comments about a negative home life on social media sites and chat rooms.
The 14-year-olds, oh, I hate my mom. She doesn't understand me. I can't wait to get out of here.
That's how police say William Jacobs and Shayla Williams met a young North Texas victim who was just 14 years old.
I walked into the motel room. I see a man sitting in the corner. The first thing that came out of his mouth was, take off your clothes so we can take these pictures. And I'm like, no, I'm not gonna take my clothes off. He said, so you wanna do this the hard way? He hit me a couple times, and after that I was out like a light. I woke up in the closet.
The closet that I was in was about the size of me right here.
After they took me out the closet, they took crushed up pills and they forced them down my throat.
After they force fed me pills, I would try to move my body, but I couldn't pick myself up.
They made me feel catatonic. After they drugged me, I had my first client.
Hope says she knew if she wanted to make it, she had to find a way to cope.
In order to survive my kidnapping, I had to create an alter ego. They told me that my name wasn't Hope anymore. It was Sophia. So that's the name that I took on. Sophia's the girl that walks with her head high. She was the one who dealt with all the clients and the Johns and the beatings. When I was with the traffickers, they never fed me. My source of food would be picking it out of the trash, drinking the water from the faucet. I bit my nails a lot. One time I was taking a shower and he busted it open and beat me with the belt because I locked the door.
The couple is accused of trafficking the teen in 8 different states in only a 3-week period.
The traffickers made me sleep with men in each state, over 20 men a day. I could never be Hope again after that. I was never going to be the same girl.
So this is a story of a Denton girl. What was the trick point? Social media. It's not a safe place. Kids shouldn't be there. There's a lot of recruiting goes on there. Did you see the picture of the girl who actually was the one who picked her up? I can almost guarantee you that she had been one of his victims before, and she became what's known as the bottom girl. They call them the bottom bitch because they become the recruiters and take on all the responsibilities of enforcement and engaging with kids, because if the African-American fella had showed up, she would be pretty scared, right? But a white girl shows up who's in her 20s, and she feels okay and safe. But actually, she was the one who was the recruiter. So what did they get out of this? The Denton man got 20 years, and Shayla Williams, his accomplice, got 5 years on trafficking of persons, 2 years on indecency with a child, and those are 2 counts of that, and so she got a total of 9 years. This is a Denton case. And if you go and look at Denton sex trafficking cases, you'll find out that your sheriff in Denton County is very aware of this issue, and they've been a part of an operation cross-country that the FBI did here not so long ago, and that they're aware and continue to watch this issue carefully. And I can tell you that the Denton County Sheriff's Office needs your support in order to be able to continue to proactively look for people who are recruiting in your area and providing sex trafficking victims in this area that include the children of your community. This is not somewhere else. This is right here in Denton. So this is a picture of the story on the 24 arrests for human trafficking that took place here from Operation Cross Country. And I would encourage you to be continuing to look at ways that you can support the Sheriff's Office and the Denton PD in this. And look at what you might be doing in your juvenile detention center. I've actually done some training here for the juvenile detention center several years ago to help them to understand what I'm going to show you about the clues, cues, scars, marks, tattoos, and stories that these children bring to the detention center. Because what happens when a girl is arrested for a sex crime or prostitution? She goes to jail. So we're still in this frame of reference where we're still making changes to the way that we deal with this, but it may be the absolute best hope that that child has of getting out of a situation. And children are working in prostitution here because they are being prostituted by someone else. Okay? Well, what brings all of this about? It's like we're living in the midst of a perfect storm. And some of those things we've talked about just a little bit. Child abuse and neglect is the bigger picture, and human trafficking is one slice of that. These are voiceless victims that are out there that are child sexual abuse victims. Remember, it's the most common thread that allows a child to become engaged with sex trafficking. These are missing children, runaway children, and children who are runaways are in danger of becoming victims of sex trafficking. Remember, the only thing that they have to exchange on the street is a sex act for something of value to them. And if they're hungry enough, that may be exactly what they end up doing. At this point, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children indicates that 1 in 6 children who run away from home and are endangered actually will become victims of sex trafficking. So let's give a little comparison to this. 1 in 8 women in the United States are subject to breast cancer. That's what the American Cancer Society, the Susan G. Komen Foundation, says. 1 in 8. The likelihood is greater that a child be a victim of sex trafficking if they run away from home than for a woman to get breast cancer. Where's the big campaign? Where's the NFL wearing blue, which is the sex trafficking color? No, we're focused on this issue of women's breast cancer, and we've got pink on everything. You can usually go up to a register at some of these women's boutiques, and they've got, you know, a pink ribbon, and you can donate to breast cancer awareness and that kind of stuff. Breast cancer has been seen as a public health issue because so many women are affected by it. How much more is sex trafficking of our children a public health issue that we are just clueless about and have not yet taken the appropriate steps to effect change? We still have this concept and mentality that pimps in our culture are this furry-coated guy from the 70s that, you know, the pimp culture, where in actuality it's the mother and daughter in the news story from Houston who were selling the granddaughter. And then, of course, NBA stars don't make enough money. Already they have to provide sex trafficking. But I can tell you that sports and sex trafficking go together. We live in an area of the Metroplex where sports is very big between the NBA, the MLB, and NFL. Yeah, get all those alphabet soups together, right? And the reality is that the porn industry drives this, and the connection to sports is clear when you start seeing the prostitution that follows that. But pornography fuels that. It's the impetus to engage in sexual activities. And he hit it on the head in the first session. And this has become a normative behavior, and it's proliferated over time. And if you go anywhere near any of the venues, you can see SOBs around the sporting venues. And I'm not talking about the people who come to the games. I'm talking about sexually oriented businesses. Now, you could have gone somewhere else with that SOB, but sexually oriented businesses are all around, and those are what allows us to see that sex trafficking is real in our communities because they're present realities. If you just did a cursory study of where all the sex oriented businesses are, you would see that they are very likely to be around the venues of sporting. And Las Vegas has taught us what goes on here stays here is a lie, because what goes on there comes home as all those diseases that he was enumerating. And what we see is people are traveling to sporting events and they think of sex as a recreational sport while they're there. We know from when the Super Bowl was here and God delivered us a freeze. Do you remember that? We kind of think that that was God's answer to it. But we know that there was a study done and that the amount of ads online, that's where these girls are sold, is online now. They're not just walking the track, they're online. In fact, if they're walking the track, they're older in the game. That it actually increased during the Super Bowl coming here. I don't think it was the exact numbers that we expected because of the weather, but it was a part of the problem. We also have Mexican cartels and other drug and gang activity that is all tied to this. And I can tell you that they're moving towards sex trafficking as their most lucrative income because they're less likely to get caught, they're less likely to get jail time, they're less likely to actually get charged with trafficking. And this has become much more lucrative to them because they have a renewable commodity. If a child gets sick or worn out, it's a dispensable commodity per them, and they can just go get another one. And they find them at the malls. There was a story online just this morning about a guy who had picked up a girl from her Bible study. So there's lots of ways. Wherever the kids hang out is where they go. The mall is just an amazing playground for traffickers. They're looking for girls, especially because 80% of the victims are girls. They're looking for girls who are what they call fresh meat. And child sexual exploitation is driven by this demand, and only when we as a society demand that people stop buying sex is when we're going to make a change. It's like the old campaigns for seatbelts, you know. When I was a kid, I grew up when seatbelts weren't even in the car. Some of you may remember that time. Yeah, I'm getting old. I was put in the back window. You know, I laid in the back window. And guess what happened when my dad stopped really fast? My three siblings who were in the seat, they went like this, and I went over them and was on the floor. So we knew that there was inherent dangers for not wearing seatbelts, right? And we made some changes because we knew that our health and welfare was at stake. Well, the same thing is true about buying and purchasing sex, is that we know that people's health and welfare is at stake, and until we take it seriously and try to prevent what's happening here, it's just going to proliferate because the demand is so great. In fact, the demand is greater now than ever before because of pornography's push and pull factors that draw people in who would never have had access to pornography and sex trafficking before this time. Who is this? Snoop Dogg, that's right. America's most lovable pimp. Do you know his voice from some of your children's movies? You should see his repertoire. Your children know his voice as characters in Disney movies, Pixar. America's most lovable pimp is what he's called. And this is what he's teaching this generation. This is girls who are commoditized and are on dog chains because that's their value. And that's what he's teaching boys. And that's what he's teaching girls is that their bodies are their sexual value. And they're getting this message everywhere. Remember, we're talking about the perfect storm. It's in everything, all the time. Not just the billboards, as he mentioned, but in their music, media, movies, their fashions. In fact, our fashion industry targets even infants. When you can buy an infant's onesie that says Hooters Girl in Training, what does it say? Why are parents buying those things? They're hypersexualizing our children. Even their toys, y'all. Even their toys. Girls are being targeted by greedy corporations who sexualize them in their ads. And in fact, Disney's done a number in just the last 50 years. So why do little three-year-old girls pose like this when they put their picture up? Well, look at the Disney characters at the bottom. That's what they have morphed to, is a highly sexualized caricature of what girls are supposed to be. They're dolls, they're toys, everything. Look at the difference between Snow White and Jasmine. There's also scientific evidence that based on our food supplies and the things that get into our bodies, that the age of puberty is falling. So 50 to 60 years ago, the average age for a child, a girl, to get puberty was 14, 15, 16. And over the last 50, 60 years, it's been falling a year for every 10 years of that time. So now our children are getting puberty at 8, 9, and 10 years old. That's the difference between high school and elementary school. Do you see the perfect storm? Because the push-pull factors are now starting much, much earlier. If you wait till middle school to have that sex conversation, you have missed it. 2 years old is when you can begin to have that conversation. And it's every day, all the time, having that conversation, empowering your child over their body. Because sexual abuse and sexual engagement is coming early and it's coming often. It's an everyday conversation. The role of the internet is incalculable. Just the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force recorded this 1,000% increase in the complaints of child sex trafficking in a 4-year period of time. Children get online, they get engaged, and it's not just in social media, it's in their Xboxes, anything that connects to the internet, where they have access to the internet and the internet has access to them. Predators are looking to trick your children. Still got your seatbelts on? Everybody take a big deep breath. This is real and present danger, not just in your children's lives, but in the households, in your church, and in your community. And until we are ready to step out and speak about this issue and understand it, we will never understand how we've come to the place of sex trafficking of our own children in our own community. I teach on this as a public health issue because people understand addressing things as a public health issue. We have West Nile virus here, right? Or they're already testing for West Nile virus. What do they tell you to do? Protect yourself. Put on your DEET, you know, all of those things, protecting ourselves from this. And the same thing is true about pornography. We must protect ourselves from it. And as mentioned earlier, I have some resources on my back table about intersecting with pornography and online protection. There's one back there from the group Covenant Eyes. I affiliate with Covenant Eyes because I believe in their product. It's a monitor and a filter, as well as an accountability software. So that means that you have someone else in your life who's helping you to maintain your level of engagement online, to be pure from the forces that are coming to get you. Children don't have to go looking for porn. It's coming to look for them. And the same thing is true about adults. If we could just get one issue right in our congregations and do this one issue, I believe that there would be some major changes in the dynamics for family life and for our congregations, for our children. But there's so many churches who are unwilling or unwittingly contributing to this because of their silence. And I believe that that's our responsibility too, to diminish sex trafficking by talking about the roots of it. Because we have many young people who are already ensnared. Remember, the average age is about 9 years old when a child gets engaged by pornography. That means they're in elementary school. Do you see how young this conversation really has to start? And it can't be just, you know, a fluffy conversation of don't do that. You have to give some practical things that a child can do. And one of the resources that I use is Pornproof Kids, and they have some really good, valuable resources to interrupt this with your children and to have those kind of conversations. I do blogging on my website at tommygrover.com, and one of those has information about children becoming the younger producers of pornography today. And we see a trend in that when a child has a cell phone, a smartphone that allows them to have the capacity to make videos, or they have a tablet or a computer, which should never be in their room, by the way. Any of those three objects should never be in their room because the vulnerabilities to a use of pornography are very, very high, and the predators are looking for children who are in a setting where they can control them. You noticed in the video that first little boy was in his room with his iPad, and he had access there. So I blog on this stuff all the time and want to help you engage to become more savvy about this. I have a copy of this little book. It's The Impact of Pornography on Children, Youth, and Culture. It talks about sexting, pornography, that kind of stuff. Easy little resource for you as a parent to gain the knowledge that you need to be able to talk with your children as well. Sexting is a real problem. That's sexually explicit text messages with videos and pictures, but also it becomes sextortion, where children are extorted for the pictures and then it's sent, you know, to a variety of people, and there's a huge amount of shame and embarrassment with that. So I would encourage you to think about those things as you talk to your children. They also can be charged with production of pornography, Just because they're a child doesn't mean that they can't be charged with that crime. This is the most unregulated social experiment of our time. Children's frontal cortexes are not fully developed until they're about 25, and so when they're introduced to pornography earlier, literally short-circuits the hardwiring that God sent them here with. We need to be teaching the more compelling message of what sexuality is about, and there's a resource that's available from purehope.net. Don't get confused between Pure Hope Foundation and purehope.net. Purehope.net has this resource available to download for free under their resources, and it's Parenting in a Sexualized Culture. So just what are they seeing? This is what I didn't want the children exposed to, because this is really horrible information. 83% of boys and 57% of girls are seeing group sex on the internet. They're seeing same-sex intercourse, and they're seeing bondage, bestiality, all kind of other things. And the exposures are to highly sadomasochistic pornography called gonzo pornography. And the goal of gonzo pornography is to see how much bodily damage they can do to a child's body. One of their ads say that they want the child to have to wear diapers the rest of their life. So there's physical consequences to a child engaging on this. One of my friends at the Cook's Children's Hospital who sees the children who come in with traumatic injuries that are sexual in nature, she said girls are emulating pornography in their relationships, and the way that they take care of their body includes removing all of their pubic hair, even when they should have it, because pornography doesn't allow that. If you're wanting to look younger, you have to be without hair there. And so we have children who are emulating what they're seeing online and participating in those kinds of activities and then producing them as well, not only in relationship with each other, but on video. There are lots of technological things that allow them access to this, and you as a parent really need to be keenly aware that it is not their right to have a cell phone. I love what he said earlier. You know, you own the phone, you control the phone. It's like giving a five-year-old the keys to your car and saying, hey, stay out of the ditches. You wouldn't no more do that than the man in the moon, right? But you give them a cell phone, a smartphone, and say, you behave with that. Hello? Some of you are of a generation like me that grew up and we survived without a cell phone. Somehow, I don't know, but we did. Kids are highly vulnerable to pornography and its influences. It opens the gateway to sexual exploitation. All of these resources, part of these that I have on the table, I have many, many more available. And if you want to do more study, you can. There is a national plan to prevent the sexual exploitation of children. Anybody here know that before today? The problem is so big, we have a national plan. The problem is we have wonderful resources and no shipping department. That's where the boots on the ground can be the church, in my opinion. You can become the ambassadors who are out there saying, hello, we have a problem, and we need to go address this. And we can do that internally as our church body, protecting our children, getting the right kinds of things in place so that we protect our own children and our own families. And then we can look at educating the community, work with the Child Advocacy Center, providing resources and materials for prevention, like Stewards of Children from the group Darkness to Light, all kinds of things. So just real quickly before we get done, I want to show you some physical, psychological, and emotional, behavioral, and academic, and social clues. So I know you can't read this. This is very far, but there are signs of sexual exploitation that include relational cues and clues that you need to be aware of. If there's an older boyfriend involved, if there's other issues that come along with the relationship, like intimate partner violence, or there's just a change in your child's behavior, there's some concern that something's not quite right. If they have some risk of exposure to running away, or they're having conflicts. Anybody here have teenagers who have never had a conflict in their home? Yeah, that means that everybody knows that children are in a very conflicted personal time, and so it's hard to know. But once they start having conflicts with you and that becomes out of proportion to what would be normative, I would encourage you to get some help, because that opens the gateway, just like the girl who we saw on the video earlier. If they're running away, if they come home with a tattoo, hello? Scars, marks, and tattoos of this kind of behavior are very real for kids who've been trafficked. And actually, the federal government is asking for the help of the faith community to address this issue, because it is so widespread and so rampant. They need our help to address this in our local communities. And I believe we are God's A team. I started there with this conversation. God's seeing what's happening. He's hearing the cries of the children, and he's compassionately responding. That is straight out of Exodus chapter 3 when Moses was standing at the burning bush. Remember that? He's standing at the burning bush. Just like I started with this, there's a wildfire that's sweeping across our country. We're all standing at the burning bush today. Now, remember, the thing that Moses did was he started giving God all of his sorry excuses about why it wasn't him that was supposed to go, right? I can imagine this protracted conversation of God with Moses. Do you remember that basket story they told you about? Well, some of us are basket cases too. And God's saying, anything in your past that I have used in the past to mold and shape you, I can use for my good and my glory to address this issue. For many of you, that may be child sexual abuse, that may be some exploitation, that may be, you know, domestic violence or something where you have a heart for these people who are enduring this kind of behavior. God uses those points of ruination to help us to be the best possible vessels. But the first place that Moses was sent to was to 3 days of prayer and fasting with the elders. What God told him to do first. He said, go assemble the elders and go to the desert for 3 days of prayer and fasting. Prayer is the work. Anything that you do is the reward. There's been a prayer team that's been praying for this, and Tesh can tell you thing after thing after thing that happened that could not have been short of God's miraculous intervention. Prayer is the work. And I believe that God's asking us to step out and to start doing things that prevent this issue, delivering the goods, being the boots on the ground, and providing for people all across the world a way that everyone can get engaged, whether it's personally, community-wide, in their relationships, no matter where you are, you can respond. So there's another fire analogy that I like to use. It's Smokey the Bear. Anybody know how old the Smokey the Bear campaign is? 70 years old. He's got his own website. He's got a music video for every generation. I mean, they're taking selfies with Smokey now in their videos. They've got a whole website. Everything's... What if Smokey's mantra wasn't only you can prevent forest fires, but it was like, all y'all don't start fires? Whose responsibility would that have been? Well, what's everybody's responsibility is no one's responsibility. So I'm calling you out today saying only you can stop human trafficking. This is your responsibility. You need to be looking at ways that you can get engaged on this. You need to be looking at ways that you can make safety possible for children in your community. You need to be looking at ways that you can parent and help your children to understand this sexualized culture. You need to be looking at ways that you can be having those conversations early and often. And grandparents, you are not off the hook. Because these conversations may happen at your house more readily than they'll happen at their parents' house. So be ready. I can remember the first conversation I had with my grandson, who's now 7 and stands this tall. We're trying to raise a gentle giant because he's supposed to be 6'8". I got down on my knees and I looked at his face and I said, I want you to know that no one ever touches you where your bathing suit covers. Okay, Gigi. And I said, and you don't touch anybody there either. Okay, Gigi. And we've had that conversation continuously as he's grown up. In fact, last week in the truck, Papa's driving and I'm in the passenger seat. Noah's behind us and I'm saying, you're getting ready to go to camp. I want to remind you, nobody touches you where your bathing suit covers and you don't touch anybody there. And you need to be willing to tell us, especially if someone tells you it's a secret. You see, planting those seeds of empowerment is very important, and you as grandparents may be the best possible ones to do that. So we can teach them about good pictures, bad pictures. We can help to buffer those things that are coming into their life. We can help to protect them from what's out there on the computer. We can help them to know that there are ways to get help if they need it. So in our local community right here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we have a couple ministries that work on the restorative care part for children who have been victims of sex trafficking. One is Traffic 911. And they do a lot of education. They've done some great education here, and I've worked with them at the Denton County Juvenile Detention Center. And then Refuge of Light in East Texas, which was started out of a church as well, and they have a restorative care home out in the greater Palestine area to provide things. And I show you these because these are people in the church who got gloriously ruined to this cause and said, okay, God, what is it you want me to do? And this is what they've been spending their life doing. This couple is retired from the prison system, and they have been working for the last 6-7 years to develop this house, and it just opened in the last year. Exciting, exciting. Restorative care for a child costs $5,000 to $7,000 per month per child. What if we were spending that on prevention? $5,000 to $7,000 per month per child? That adds up pretty quickly. So this kind of ministry is not for everybody. Pure Hope, who I'm here representing today, is on their beginning part of their journey, but they have some really big hopes and dreams and aspirations for helping those organizations that free people, that help to rescue and restore people's lives, and to help create a sustainable plan for those organizations that are out there working on the front lines. I also have written a book to the church as was introduced. It's called Compelled, and there's a copy of it that'll be given away today. But I can tell you, for those of you who have access to the internet, it's available on a special price this month for 99 cents for an ebook. And you can go to my website. In fact, there's cards back there you can pick up. And if you go to my website, you can buy it for just 99 cents. And it teaches the church the four areas as a public health issue: prevention, intervention, education, and restoration, as a part of how you can learn to respond.